The hour of 12:45 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Greater Minnesota Jobs and Economic Development Finance Division. The first bill on the agenda is House File 7. The chair will move House File 7 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Eklund, please present your bill, and the bill should be in your packet, members.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members. I want to thank you for hearing House File 7 today. It is a top priority for many of us in Greater Minnesota, and this effort has been a bipartisan one. Thanks to Representative Lehman for her leadership last year and her and others' support this year. Funding this program is critically important to ensuring the future competitiveness of Greater Minnesota. Too many parts of our states, particularly rural areas, don't have a reliable service. I'd like to give you an example of yesterday at the Rob Eklund residence at 4647 Highway 11. My wife and I were going through our monthly bills, and we had half a dozen we had to pay. By the time we got done, because of our lousy internet service, it was about 2 hours later, being clicked on and off of having internet access at my house. Well, interesting part about this is I have three companies fiber that run, two of them run right through my yard. Well, I call it my yard, it's the right of way, actually. That's where they can, but I mow it, so it's mine. And then the other one is right across the road in the right of way in the ditch right across from my house. So I have three companies fiber running within 100 yards of my house or less, and I can't access any of them. The one that I can access is through DSL from there, however they do it further down the road to get it back to my place. So that's just one of many stories that I could use from the Rob Eklund residence. There's more and more that we have with bad internet service, so I'll leave it at that. We have the opportunity to make investments now that will pay dividends well into the future for every sector of our state's economy. Sectors needing it include farmers, small business, telemedicine, health care, and manufacturing. It is my hope that this will be the year that we finally can provide secure ongoing funding for the broadband. With that, Mr. Chair and members, we have several testifiers to talk to the merits of this bill.
Representative Eklund, we have an amendment. I would prefer to take the amendment at this time, because if the amendment would go on, it might change the testimony that we're going to hear. So, Representative Lehman, I think you have the H007A1 amendment. So do you wish to move that amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Representative Lehman, I want to thank you for letting us know that the amendment was coming. As you know, we have no standing written rules in this committee, as I previously have on the other committees that I've chaired. We try to run a fair and open process, and sometimes things happen and amendments happen, and we will take them up if we have the time and the support. So, Representative Lehman, to your amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I like the fact that it's number 007.
It's kind of cool. Well, it's 007, oh. But I'm not sure.
H-O-007.
But the 007 works for me, too.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank Representative Eklund for his longstanding leadership and support of broadband. And he and I sort of traded places. He was right after me last year on the bill. And it is a bipartisan effort, and that's why I really enjoy getting behind this, because the lack of broadband is not a Republican issue and it's not a Democrat issue. It's an issue, and for me, it resides here in this Greater Minnesota Jobs Committee, because it really is kind of the key to economic development as we look into the future in the 21st century. It's how we are going to be connected to the world, how we are going to get our services and products around the world in a competitive way. So I have an amendment here, Mr. Chair, because last year I worked with the Broadband Coalition and the Governor's Task Force, and we last year said, let's make this a bipartisan effort. We need money. And they came to me and they said, we need $51,480,000. And I sort of swallowed hard and thought, well, that's a chunk of change. But then they showed me how they got to that number. Because they'd actually been asked by us, legislators, to come up with a number that they would need to get their job done. And so they came up with this number that they needed, about $51 million every biennium, to, over the course of, I can't remember what it was, I'm going to have to ask Dana to recall, but I think it was over the course of 4 to 6 years, reach their broadband goal. And unfortunately, we were only able to come up with $15 million last year. And but I'm very pleased because, as we all know, we get budget targets in committee, and the Jobs Committee last year got a budget target of $15 million, and it was all of that $15 million went to broadband. So I came away pretty happy about that. Until it was vetoed. And it was like all of our work, and I could go on and on and on, but the grassroots effort behind broadband is tremendous. The committee chair actually scheduled a separate hearing for this on a different day than we normally meet because it was broadband day on the Hill. We filled the hearing room with people on both sides and from all over Minnesota. And so we got the $15 million. It was vetoed. And so I presenting, Mr. Chair, an amendment today because when we heard from Dana earlier in this committee and she was presenting the bill that we have in front of us, I asked her, I said, you know, well, did it hurt you to have zero funding last year? And she said, well, yeah, you know, we could continue with the projects that we had, but we couldn't entertain new projects. And so I took that to heart, and I am here to present my 7A1 amendment that simply adds to the bill, insert $15 million in fiscal year 2019, and to actually make that amount effective the day after final enactment. So I'm hoping that this bill, you know, I Representative Eklund, I know you're not in charge of the path of this bill, but I hope that it makes it on its own to the governor, and so that when the governor signs this additional funding would be made available immediately. So that's my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Layman, I'm going to ask staff to clarify for us when we insert the extra $15 million. Are we looking at a base adjustment, or are we looking at one-time funding with the money that is in the bill and then with the addition of the $15
million? I'm looking at adding $15 million that would be available immediately.
Representative Layman, I understand that. What I want clarification.
Okay.
Is this one-time money, or is this base adjustment?
This is one-time money.
That's the clarification that I want, so people understand this is one-time money and not a base adjustment. Base adjustments roll forward. They tend to get more expensive.
Yes.
So it's one-time money. So, Representative Eklund, I'm going to have you address the amendment first because we're adding more money to your – or the amendment would be adding more money to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And I talked to Representative Layman this past weekend on this bill, on this amendment. The $70 million is in the governor's budget request, and that is the same as what this bill is. So at this time, until we find out better what we have going forward for targets, I would prefer us not to adopt the amendment.
So, Representative Eklund, that was in the governor's first budget. I believe there's another budget coming out on the 15th of March, which, as members know, is the Ides of March, and politically speaking, somewhat dicey for politicians. But do you know if the governor is going to continue at this level in his supplemental budget or if he was going to change?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not heard whether he's going to stay at this level or not at this time.
So, discussion to the amendment. Representative Layman. I'm sorry, Representative Anderson, did you wish to speak?
I did.
All right, sorry, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is interesting, and we did something like this in agriculture where we appropriated some money immediately for mental health assistance for farmers, and it was taken out of existing funding that was available in a program called Agri in agriculture. Being this was allocated last year and was vetoed, is this money available in some other area of under your jurisdiction, we could use this as existing funds and not have to change the spending target, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, my areas of jurisdiction are rather nebulous, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly what the areas of jurisdiction are of this committee, but I intend to make them as expansive as possible by the time session ends. Representative Anderson.
So was that a maybe, that there may be some existing funding you could tap into?
I like to articulate things with the possibility of almost anything happening, and quite often anything does. Representative Lehman, to your amendment.
And if anyone else wants to speak, I'd be happy to give them.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, it might be good to know if the account is empty at the moment or it has any money left in it, and I don't really know that. Does staff or anyone know whether there's money left in the broadband account?
Representative Mahoney, we will defer that question to staff.
Mr. Chair, representatives, we're not sure the exact amount right now. We would have had to check, like, for example, earlier today, but it is roughly $100,000.
Thank you.
Representative Lehman, you made the comment about his bill proceeding alone. My preference would be that the bill proceeds alone, too, but I don't know if that decision has been made yet, and it is going to Ways and Means. But it would be nice to have individual bills on the House floor rather than omnibus bills this session so that we all understood what we're voting for and against. So I do support your statement about individual bills proceeding if they at all can. So any more questions on the amendment for Representative Lehman?
Well, I'll just wrap up if there's no other questions. And I would just say this, and that is, first of all, I'd like a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
I know you don't have all the answers, and I understand that you are being very forthright and transparent when you say you don't know totally what's going to be under your purview. But it seems to me when I look at what I think is under our purview, this is probably one of the most important pieces we can do in a positive way. Last time we met, we were talking about being prepared for disasters. With this bill, we're doing something positive to promote economic development, which I'm hoping we can do more of in this committee. So I would just really push for a positive vote on this amendment because I think it's a good statement from us representing jobs in greater Minnesota that this really is important to us, and we can't go a year without funding until we've finished the job. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You got to remember, members, that this $35 million will more than double itself by the time we get to having the broadband person back there in the corner there allocating this money. In fact, it probably will be three times because, generally speaking, the match is more than 1-to-1. So if we're really interested in taking care of the unserved and underserved, like Rob has up there, we have to put as much money as we can. I know Nebraska, when it first came out, funded broadband for the whole state all at once. Everybody had equal, everybody had some high-speed broadband. I think if it was me and I was king, which I'm not, I would have $100 million and $100 million so we can get it done so small communities can be able to have the same things that some of the larger communities have and, frankly, take for granted. I know in Martin County, according to the map, we're underserved and unserved. Fairmont has it through Midco. It got great speeds and everything else. But I do not think that it's fair for having smaller communities not have the ability and availability of high-speed broadband.
Further discussion to the amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and committee members, whether we add $15 million or $35 million, it's amazing to me, having sat on the broadband funding committee since the fund has been the inception. I spent the last several years fighting pretty difficult battles with the past Republican chair who wanted zero in this, and now all of a sudden we're adding on and adding on. I think that's called irony, but maybe not. So I find it interesting now that today the Republican side of the aisle, which for years tried to tamp it down and tamp it down and tamp it down, all of a sudden has found the broadband religion. So it's good to see that finally. I want everyone to realize that for the last 6 years, the other side of the aisle in the broadband funding supported 0, 10, blood running down the aisles to get to like 15, and now all of a sudden we want $100 million in this thing. So I'm going to support the amendment. I don't know the decision by the time it's all done when it comes to the floor, but it's very frustrating to see that flip. I wish it had been there, because when I tried it the first time, I got it sliced down and got fought against by a number of people on the floor in committee. Then the chairman came along and said, satellite will do it, satellite will do it. Had a satellite truck out front. I had amendments like this time and time again. And people on the committee voted it down, which is amazing. So it's very frustrating to see the flip, because we have been trying to do this forever. And now we're actually going to do it, and you're trying to jump on the bandwagon. You should have some consistency.
Further, Representative Layman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I hear you and I hear your frustration. You can only imagine how frustrated someone like myself is when I run up against folks that don't necessarily agree with me. But I will say that there is a rural contingency here in the legislature, and they're not just Republican, they're Democrat as well, that has been supporting broadband for a long time and get it. They get it. Personally, I've been working to promote broadband before broadband became a word. It was just called high-speed internet. And it was back in the 1990s, and I was a head of economic development in my county, and I built something called the Itasca Technology Exchange to bring in the first high-speed internet so that startup businesses who wanted to use the internet could have redundant coverage. And since that time, I've been in economic development, and I've been working at broadband as one of the number one issues. So this is no flip on my part. This is a consistency that I've now in a position to actually put money where my mouth is, put money into broadband. And so that's why I'm doing this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question for the author. Are you planning to do $15 million and then minus, so 35 minus 15, so it's 15 now, then it's 20, then it's 35, or are you 15 on top of 70?
Representative Layman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, I'm talking about $15 million on top of the 70 and $15 million available immediately. And it's one time. Increase. What I'm trying to do, Representative Poppy, Mr. Chair, is to make up for the $15 million that was vetoed last session. There was no funding last session at all for broadband.
Further discussion. Before a roll call has been requested, and before I call the roll call, I want to remind the committee and the people in the audience that in a roll call, the chair has the versatility to vote a number of ways. The chair can vote first. The chair can vote last. The chair can vote in alphabetical order, or the chair cannot vote. I'm going to ask that the roll be taken, and the chair is going to vote first, and the chair is going to vote aye.
Representative Lee?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Barr?
No.
Representative Brand? Representative Daniels? Representative Danoff?
Yes.
Representative Gunther?
Yes.
Representative Lena?
Yes.
Representative Lislegard? Representative Mahoney?
Yes.
Representative Purcell? Representative Poppy?
Sure.
Representative Sandstead?
Yes.
Representative Soak?
Yes.
There being 10 ayes, 2 nays, the amendment is adopted. Representative Becken, you have a list of testifiers, or do you wish to say something now that we've improved your bill?
The more the merrier on the money, Mr. Chairman, so we can start with the testifiers.
But I believe a thank you is appropriate.
Well, thank you.
So with the with the testifiers, Commissioner Grove, I think, is first on my list. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Grove, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Let me dive right in. This is my second time in front of this committee on this really exciting piece of legislation. We are thrilled that Representative Eklund has moved this forward and are really excited about making broadband in all of Minnesota homes a possibility. The governor has campaigned on this. He's made it a core part of his budget. I'm here on his behalf and on the Lieutenant Governor's behalf to reiterate just how much this we believe this is important to the future of Minnesota's economy. As you all know, we are at the point right now where about 90% of the homes in Minnesota have access to high-speed broadband. That's 25 megabits down, 3 megabits up. And that last 10% is the toughest 10%. And so now is the time to really make sure that we incentivize the construction of broadband lines to ensure that every house in the state can have that access. And this bill puts us on a path to get there. As you all know, the statutory requirements state that we need to get to 25 down, 3 up by 2026, and that the lines that we put in to ensure that that connection is stable also be able to take an even higher and faster speed of broadband at 100 down and 25 up, which is what you really want to have high-speed broadband. So the math on this is pretty simple. The 35 and 35 is something we're able to calculate after having run this program for several years at DEED, so we know exactly what it will take to put us on the path to get to that space. 185,000 homes are at stake. These are the homes that need to get broadband with this money. Since 2014, this program, which is one of its first of its class in the nation, has invested $85.6 million to make sure broadband reaches all Minnesota households. We've gotten over 33,000 households connected with broadband, and we've leveraged $110 million in private and local matching funds as well. So again, this isn't just the state paying for broadband. It's a really innovative matching program that makes that possible. We have a national leader at DEED who leads this program. Her name is Dana McKenzie. You all know her well. She and her team have really built a program that I think we all in the state should be proud of. And, you know, look, I think for the governor and for DEED, we think this is a critical foundational piece of making Minnesota the kind of state where you don't have to move to a metro area to succeed, where you don't have to move out of your small town to participate in the global economy, and where you can start a business, participate in a business, work remotely for a business, and just connect with the global economy right from the comfort of your own home with broadband access. So we are thrilled that this bill is making its way through the legislature. We're in full support of it, and really appreciative of Representative Eklund for putting this bill forward and are here in strong support. With that, we'll take any questions you might have for DEED. Representative Pulaski.
Commissioner, address the improvements we've just made to the bill. How do you anticipate this bill now that it's been improved?
So we won't take a stand on the amendment itself. To give you a sense of its implementation, if that amendment were to pass, rather than run three rounds for grants, we would, or sorry, rather than run two rounds for grant applications, we'd probably run three and get a shorter one in this year to go after some of the applications that are already in process to move more quickly. That's how we would administer the amendment if it were to pass.
So, Commissioner, I know that you probably can't, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What would be in the supplemental bill on the 15th for broadband from the governor?
Mr. Chair, it's a good question. We're actively working on that, and we'll let you know on the 15th.
All right. Members, questions? Rep. Sam Saul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that this is not something you're going to answer off the cuff. Can this map be produced so that it would show incremental improvement? There are two increments that I'd like to see. Mm-hmm. The amount that could be installed within, let's say, a six-month roll ahead, and then also incremented by dollars. So if I'm living in Martin County, is that right? I know that that's rural space, and so that gives me a good way of understanding how is this engine moving as it goes across Minnesota and it starts to impact the people with the highest level of need. I happen to be lucky enough that I live in one of the major cable markets, and so theoretically I always have access to a pretty big pipe if I just want to pay for it. I know that's not true in places like Martin County, and it'd be really interesting. This is an interesting map, but I suspect it's got a certain amount of age on its colors already, and so it doesn't look forward at all. So I don't know if that's available, but that'd be very useful. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a great question. Let me talk to staff and see what we can do.
Further questions of the commissioner? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the commissioner. I can't remember the exact numbers that we put into this program over the last 6 years, but $70 million, I believe when it was first brought up, it was a $200 million bill. I think we've got to be at 125 or somewhere in that neck of the woods that we put into it. What's left after the $70 million?
Commissioner.
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative, the $70 million is calculated on the theory that on the calculation of how much we need to spend each year between now and 2026 to meet these goals. And so we know that amount because we've administered the program in the past. It is just a biennial number, and so that is the ask. It's important to note that the $70 million alone won't finish the job, but it puts us on the right pace to finish the job based on the biennial budgeting schedule. And so that is why the number is where it is. It's calculated to make sure we're on pace, but it doesn't cover the entire 4 years. It's a biennial ask.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understood it's a biennial ask.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember having read the report more than a few years back. I don't remember all the details to it. There was a schedule. There was a dollar figure. Where are we, and when do we expect to be done with this? Is this another $70 million in the next biennium, or is it $10 million in the next biennium to come to that $200 million, or are we now going to go larger than $200 million?
Commissioner.
Mr. Representative, so we're at 90% of coverage in the state of Minnesota. And it will require, on pace, every year between now and 2026, $35 million spent every year. This gets us back on track to get there.
26.
Representative Mahoney?
So, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, when it gets us back on pace for $35 million, so you're saying $35 million a year through 2026. Is that correct?
Commissioner.
I believe it is. Can I ask staff real quick?
Dan, is that?
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Is that the pace we need?
This
was
the number calculated.
Yeah.
Why don't you come down and just introduce yourself for the committee and take over for the commissioner?
All right.
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Dana McKenzie, and I'm the Executive Director for the Office of Broadband Development. And to answer your question, the number that we're talking about today was actually a number that was calculated to achieve the 2022 goal. And so as the current calculations that came out of the Broadband Task Force were based on an annual number between now and the year 2022. I think that...
Representative Mahoney?
No, Mr. Chair, now I'm even more confused. It was based through 2022, and what was the original number? That came out of the task force report. What was the original number?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Representative, there have been a number of... The task force has issued a recommendation each year, and it has been modified based on progress. I believe you may be referring to a $100 million ask that was made early on in their history. I'm not going to remember which year that was.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, Again, it's been 3 years or better since I've read the report cover to cover. I know there was an original number that said this was how much we were going to put into it and should get us completely covered statewide. Do you remember that number?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I apologize. I do not recall that that whole number has ever been calculated because there is a significant recognition that this is a moving target. There are federal investments being made each year. There are private investments being made. So each year the task force makes a recommendation based on the new inputs of what has happened during the their deliberation during that year. So I apologize, but I don't recall a whole number that was the estimate for the entire
Mr. Chair.
All of what?
Representative Mahoney.
Do you remember how much the state has put in at this point up to today or whatever?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the state has invested $85.6 million.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
$35 million through 26 is about $225 million, plus another $85 million. And none of that's going into any metro county at all, period. It's all going to Greater Minnesota, correct?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, there have been suburban outer ring communities that have received small grants. However, the vast majority of it is going to Greater Minnesota communities.
So just
Representative Mahoney.
As one of the only urban members on this committee, I'm going to stand up for urban Minnesota, and having listened the last few years, all my Greater Minnesota friends tell us how badly we urbanites treat Greater Minnesota, I wonder how many bridges and roads we could fix with $300 million or better. I wonder how many other things could be done out in Greater Minnesota for $300 million. I'm just very frustrated with being told that we treat Greater Minnesota as our poor cousins. We're partners in this whole thing. Economic development, more than 60% goes to Greater Minnesota every year. That covers all pieces and all parts. And this is another $300 million adding on to that. I want my Greater Minnesota colleagues to remember that for every dollar Greater Minnesota sends in, they get almost $1.40 back, which means that for every dollar I send in or my constituents send in, I get 60 cents of that dollar. I don't think I've ever, or any of our your urban colleagues, ever forget that this is one Minnesota. I'm not asking for presents on Christmas. I'm not asking for anything else like that. But I just get tired of hearing how much we must hate Greater Minnesota and pat you on the head, because we don't. We know that when the state doesn't work, the cities don't work.
Representative Anderson, you're next on my list.
Gee, thanks. Mr. Chair, thank you, and this discussion is getting to be far-reaching, and each part of the state has its strong points and points that it needs assistance on, and we produce the food that people all over the state enjoy and eat, and let's just work together. My question or comment is we do projects year after year. We pick up the areas that have the highest population densities, so as we get towards the end, this last 10%, do we, in effect, increase the cost? And is the final goal to get every home in the state at some point hooked up to fiber cable?
Commissioner Ms. McKenzie, which one wishes to field it? Ms. McKenzie, I guess.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the statutory goal as states that the goal is to reach all homes and businesses with the level of speed at each of those years, 25 megs down, 3 megs up. There is nothing in the statute that talks about fiber optics. A lot of the projects do choose to propose fiber optic projects, but the state goal is 100% coverage.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up then. So when we finish this project, and it's been a daunting challenge, will the goalpost be raised to 100 speeds download, and will that keep increasing as time goes by? Will we ever totally finish this job?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is one of the reasons the state has chosen to charter a broadband task force for the last 8 years, is so that a body of experts that's outside of state government can deliberate those questions and come back with well-informed recommendations on whether or not you all should consider modifying those goals based on changing variables and changing use patterns.
So, Ms. McKenzie, we have the private sector greatly involved in this broadband effort. So if we complete the entire state at a certain level, wouldn't it then be the responsibility of the private sector to continue the improvements on the network that the state has built?
Mr. Chair, one of the aspects of the state grant program, and I believe it's also a party to some of the federal funding, is that a sustainable business model is also part of that proposal. So, yes, it is the state's assumption that there would not be the need to come back and invest again using state dollars in places where the state has invested.
Ms. McKenzie, I would hope you would continually remind us of that as we proceed this session. Thank you. Further questions of the commission? Yep. Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner and Dana, I think I asked this question last time and you didn't know, and I'm wondering if you have new information. You talked about the value, Dana, particularly of the task force as being this independent group of experts. Do you know if Governor Waltz is planning to have his own task force, broadband task force?
Commissioner, I think that one's to you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, we're discussing it now. I can't announce anything at this time.
Okay. Maybe that will be, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, maybe that will be announced when the new budget is announced.
Representative Lehman and Commissioner, I'm not going to disparage the almost unbelievable growth of commissions that we like to enact, but we do have standing committees of the legislature. And we have subcommittees under those standing committees. And we have budgets that work in the interim. I would hope it what might be a better plan would be to use these standing committees and these subcommittees over the interim instead of creating another entity. These commissions, and I remember in 2014 where Governor Dayton tried to eliminate some that hadn't even met and met resistance. So just as a possibility, perhaps the governor might wish to work directly with us. It's just a thought.
All right, Mr. Chair. Well, thanks for that. I appreciate the advice. I think the Broadband Task Force has been a vital body for external advice and wisdom on these goals that has been helpful in the past. But I agree with you that we should be looking at all voices in this, and I thank you for that advice.
Well, Commissioner, I would question the vitality of endless numbers of commissions being enacted and almost none of them ever ceasing. Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you speak, I assume this would be Ms. McKenzie, can you speak to the percentage of households in greater Minnesota that are at that 100 download 20 upload rate? And second question would be, when you say you're hoping that the state puts in some of this money and then you're hoping the private sector can take over and take it from there, would that be to get some of these homes that are at the 25.3 up to the 120, or just basic ongoing operating and maintenance work?
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair, Representative, and I wish I'd brought my numbers with me. The percentage of rural households that are connected at the 100 by 20, was that your question? And I'll have to get back to you on that. It is in the 70% range, 70 to 80%, but I'm happy to get back to you with the specific number. And as to the expectation, the program does not have baked into it a specific expectation that a budget submitted for a 25x3 project would be sufficient to upgrade it to specifically 100x20 meg service. However, the financial plan that is submitted does take into consideration that network is scalable to 100 megabit service as is required by law.
Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then what I'm hearing, I guess, is that you don't necessarily have plans within the budget request to move up to the 120, just that the projects that are laid out at the 25-3 have the ability to be scaled up?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. McKenzie.
Representative, correct. That is the way it's laid out in law, and that is what we contractually agree to with the project execution team.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion? Commissioner Ms. McKenzie, thank you, and I'm sure we'll be revisiting this as we proceed. Thank you.
Thank you,
I'm going
Chair.
To vary the testifiers. I think Vince Robinson wanted to be next after the commissioner. So, Mr. Robinson, if you wish to come down, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Vince Robinson, and I'm the owner and president of Development Services Incorporated in Ivanhoe, Minnesota, and I also serve as the executive director for Lincoln County Enterprise Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit organization that's funded by local units of government, and we provide development services for entrepreneurs, businesses, and communities of Lincoln County. So I'm pleased to be a member of and represent here today the Minnesota Rural Broadband Coalition. You have the fact sheet in front of you that you've referenced already. The Broadband Coalition is made up of more than 80 organizations, and these represent a very broad cross-sector of our state, including local governments, education, agriculture, Main Street businesses, manufacturing, healthcare, cooperatives, telecoms, and others. So, you know, it's not just one voice speaking about this broadband issue. It's coming from all sectors of our state, the importance of this. So House File 7 is that you're discussing today is our top priority for our coalition. Fund the fund is what we need to do in order to meet these goals. We appreciate the work that Representative Eklund and many of the other House members have done in supporting this legislative initiative. And we certainly thank you for hearing the bill today. Lincoln County is a small, rather sparsely populated county in southwest Minnesota. You know, it's a beautiful place, many lakes, rolling hills, thousands of acres of farmland and grassland. People come there for recreational amenities all the time, hunting, fishing, camping, much more. It's also home to the largest concentration of wind turbines in our state. Unfortunately, however, we're also one of the most economically disadvantaged counties in the state. We have an aging population. We have not a lot of high-paying jobs other than agriculture, which, as you know, has its ebbs and flows. But what we do know is that we're never going to prosper as a county unless we can get the broadband that we need. We have to have access to markets outside of our area, and we have to have information coming in from outside. Our students need this. You know, we have students that live a ways from school. They can't even do their homework in many of our homes because of the broadband lack. We also need it for healthcare. I happen to serve on one of our local hospital boards, and we talk all the time about the changes in healthcare and healthcare delivery, and how it's not going to be too far into the future when you're going to have broadband accessible in your home if you're going to be able to communicate with your doctors and other healthcare professionals in a way that's meaningful. We also have telecommuter workers who are having problems, lots of problems, trying to work from home. And this is one of, as you know, fastest growing sectors of our workforce is telecommuters. And we want to have the opportunity to have those types of opportunities in Lincoln County. And certainly we talked about farms. Farming is one of the fastest growing technology businesses there are. When I say fastest growing, I mean fastest changes in technology. And my farmer friends are way ahead of me when it comes to understanding how technology works, and yet they need to have the access in order to be successful. And our local government is needed to provide emergency services and other things. Currently, we have a local telecommunications cooperative called Interstate Telecommunications, Telecommunications Co-op. And they have been working with our county commission to come up with a plan to do internet, fiber to the home, throughout our county. They currently serve with telephone services in the western half of the county. They would also like to extend this fiber network to the eastern half of the county. In order to do that, it's an $8.5 million project. So when you talk about the costs of this last 10% in geographically difficult areas like ours and a little bit more sparsely populated areas, it does get expensive on those last miles. So $8.5 million to have a project that's financially feasible, they said that they could come up with $2.5 million. So they came to our county and asked for $6 million. Our county commissioners are trying to figure out how to make that work in a county of 6,000 people. You can imagine that, you know, half of that would be a huge commitment from our county. And so we are interested in having this broadband border-to-border fund so that we can take advantage, like the rest of our neighboring counties have been able to do, with some of the funding that's available. This border-to-border grant program, as you've already heard, is essential to meeting the goals of the state to have 100 by 20 by 2026 or 25 by 3 in 2022. You've already heard about the targets that were laid out previously and how those targets have adjusted over time. We appreciate the funding that we've had in the past. It was a huge disappointment last year, as you've already heard, to see all the work that we put into getting even the nominal amount that we were awarded from the legislature to be vetoed at the governor's office. So we want to pick that back up. We're very happy to see the support that we're getting this year, and whatever we can do to assist with that going forward is what we're here to help with. It's imperative that in order for this entire state to raise that we meet these goals. It doesn't do those who have good broadband access a lot of good if they're trying to communicate with people in our county that don't have that access. So it's as frustrating on both ends, whether you have high-speed internet now and your customer doesn't have it, or your family member or your student doesn't have it. It's extremely frustrating all the way around. So those that already have it should be as supportive as of this as those that don't have it, because it's going to take all of us in order to reach the full potential of what the internet can do for us. So whatever we can do to assist you in helping to make this happen, that's what we're here for. And again, Mr. Chair, members, thank you for having me here today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Robinson, you made reference to the this colored fact sheet, and just had a question on the map. There's an awful lot of red showing there, which indicates less than 50% have high-speed broadband, and yet in the text it says it's about 80%. The map colors wouldn't indicate that. Could you comment on that 80% figure of rural Minnesota having high-speed broadband?
Mr. Robinson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so I think Dana, as you've already heard, is the map maker, so I would refer some of those questions to her, but what I can say is that there are areas that do have access if it's affordable, which in many cases it's not affordable, and that's one of our other goals, is to not just have access. To doesn't do us much good if it's $300 a month and our people can't afford it. So there are sectors within here that do have access. However, you know, when you start to drop below 50% of the residents having that available to them, that's really what this map is indicating. There are pockets that have it, and so when they talk about being down to the last 10% of the population, they are dispersed throughout these red areas.
Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the list of testifiers is Monty Morrow. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Monty Morrow with Nuvera Communications. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me. I am the legislative and regulatory administrator for Nuvera. Nuvera is headquartered in New Ulm, Minnesota. We are a rural telco. We have operations that span from as far north as Litchfield, Minnesota, to as far west as Springfield and Redwood Falls, to as far south as Orillia, Iowa, to as far east as the Goodhue, Mazeppa areas, which is over by Red Wing and Rochester. I'm here to speak on behalf of what it's like to be a service provider to participate in this process, in the grant process, and just give you a brief history of what we've done. In 2015, you're going to have to forgive my years because the grant applications and the grant implementation years tend to fall on different years depending on when the grant is awarded versus when you're actually plowing. So in 2015, the first year, we didn't do it. We took a wait-and-see attitude to see how it went and what happened. In 2016, we put in an application and were awarded for the Goodhue area. We put in 39 locations. In 2017, we built in Belchester, Hanscom, Minnesota, which is just south of New Ulm, and Mazeppa. We had a grant goal for those three builds of 370. We actually ended up putting in 409 locations. And the reason being is when you start to build these locations, engineering-wise, things don't just go down a road. Sometimes when you have reached a certain node or cabinet with fiber, it's easy to come backwards or it's easy to extend past that. 409 locations that year was a lot of territory, and you understand that when you go out and drive around and look at those locations and you start counting 409 rural locations and 409 farms, that's a lot of territory. In 2018, we are in progress from that grant period. And that we are going to be putting in at least 110 locations in the White Rock area and 47 more in the Hanska area. What's interesting about the grant process and the grant applications are, as a service provider, some of the toughest places to build and justify make really good applications. And that's fantastic because the places we're building to are the toughest spots to get to. So it's fantastic. Probably the things that I've learned the most throughout going through this process is the customer profiles. What I thought we knew was going on in our territory, who I thought we knew lived in our territory, I couldn't have been further off. The applications, and you learn that when you go do the reviews, when you're driving around with the technicians, sitting in the truck, talking about which farmer does what they do. Some of the examples that I have for that is down in the Rochester area, the Goodhue, Mazeppa, White Rock area, we have lots of Mayo employees. We also have lots of smart farms, livestock, video security, data tracking, etc. By trade, I'm a what I like to call a reformed engineer. I thought I knew complexity, having worked on railroads and airlines. Those farmers are incredible nowadays what they're doing. The obvious benefits to education, I mean, everybody that's going to testify in front of you will talk about that, and we all know that. I also learned that when we were doing a site visit last year, we're doing a lot of remote management. There's a large hydro dam down in the Zumbro River that RPU is using that service for now that it's built there. The files, what ordinary contractors do, their bids, their specs, their drawings, the stuff is incredibly data intensive. And probably the best example that I have, that I don't have proof to give you, because we don't have permission to do it, it would be marketing gold if we did have it, is in the Hanska area, we have a gentleman that's producing soundtracks for Hollywood movies, and he either works out of New York or he works out of Hanska at his mother's home. And when he's in Hanska, he's uploading terabytes of information for these things. They're major Hollywood blockbusters. There again, it would be marketing gold if I could get permission to use that, but I can't. The individual's private, but that's a good example of what's happening out there that, quite frankly, I had no clue of what was going on. The next thing I'd like to talk about is the Office of Broadband Development, the DEED staff. The application process, oversight, responsiveness, thoroughness is something to behold. I think that there's a lot of folks that should be modeling themselves after what these folks are doing. It starts, like I said, with the application. During the closeouts, there's personal site visits. Those folks, they jump right in our trucks and they ride around. As one former member of the OBD who's sitting behind me said, with our first one, she looked at me and she said, "Okay, Monty, show me what we bought." And you do. You go out, you look at the fiber beds, you look at the cabinets, you go up to customers, you talk to the farmers, you talk to the businesses. It's incredible. To follow up on that, there's another element where the folks from Connected Nations do the mapping and the testing. There's a gentleman that shows up with a pickup that's incredibly complex with the equipment that he has in there. He plugs in. If you say you can do gigabit service, he tests it down to the bit and the byte. So if you're not putting out what you say you're putting out, what your bid did, it's not going to pass muster. I also serve on the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. I'm the chair of the regulatory committee for that organization. And as a bonus of that, I get to sit on what they call a state execs meeting. So every year these folks get together. They're from as far west as Montana, Wyoming, the Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois. And they sit down, and they're all, what they're doing in now is they're using what they've dubbed the Minnesota model. It's very successful. They're all trying to mimic this model. It works. They're jealous of it. It starts with you folks. It starts with the legislatures. Our Office of Broadband Development, they're trying to get that going in their respective states and mimic that. The providers are all trying to go through the same process regarding the applications and the certifications. And the bottom line is our customers and your constituents are the winners. I'd like to dovetail off something that Representative Gunther said a little bit ago when he talked about the grants and the matching of it. I have stats, if you want to hear them, of what an ordinary grant looks like, yet what the build cost truly is for these locations. Be more than happy to go through that. That's all I have. Thank you for your time and, most importantly, your support. Mr. Chair, I'd entertain questions.
Thank you. Questions, members? Thank you very much. I'm going to remind the testifiers. I have six testifiers, and we're supposed to adjourn the meeting at 2:15. So if we can stay within about 5 minutes, that would help. And I see I have two. I would hope these folks are from out of town, but John Warner's next, mayor of City of Rice Lake. Mr. Warner, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. I represent a small community, not unlike any other small community in this state. We're right now estimated at 4,100 population. We're the sixth largest governmental body within St. Louis County, and we have been that sixth largest for over since the 60s. We are a new city in that we incorporated in 15. We have been operating under urban rules since the 60s again. All of that being said, the problems that we experience are not unlike any of the other smaller areas, whether it be a township or whether it be a city. Just as a couple issues that, and I'm going to be very brief because I want City Councilor Hursted to also speak. She's been leading this effort within the city. But just as an example, as far as our legislative priorities that we've had, City Hall is not some little stick-built building sticking in the woods or next to a pasture. Okay, that building was built in the 70s. It's a concrete building, block building. fully functional, operates the staff that we have as a township, now as a city, very viable, but you would swear to God it was on the far side of the moon when it comes to broadband. We have four staff in there, and any time that they want to do something, click the button and go get a cup of coffee. We have been hitting our head against the wall in reference trying to get providers that would do service to us, and these are just two numbers, and we had just had this done. We have a download speed of 1.25, and we have an upload speed of 0.65. And when you're trying to run a community, whether it be a township or as a city, it's next to impossible. The city hall is in the middle of our 32 square miles. We are right on the fringe. We're less than 4.5 miles from downtown Lake Superior with Duluth. We're next to the university, so we have an awful lot of university students that live within our community. We also have an extra large amount of medical personnel because of the staffs that are being brought in, and they're required to live within certain distances of their hospital as far as their response times. And so that's why our growth is what it is, and it has had numerous building applications in the last 2 years. But again, broadband, high-speed internet, being able to talk to anybody, it's been frustrating trying to get companies to respond to our needs. Our citizens have continually complained about the issue of not having broadband in any way, shape, or form. And again, we have a number of that try to work from home, but they end up having to commute back in, either into Hermantown, the air base, or into Duluth. With that, if there are no questions for me, I would like to invite Councillor Hursted to continue with more specifics.
Mayor, were any questions of the mayor? No. Thank you. So then, next on the list.
Thank you,
Ms. Hursted. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Suzanne Hursted, and I serve on the council for City of Rice Lake. And I appreciate the opportunity to voice our support for House File 7 and add to Mayor Warner's testimony in highlighting the need that the city has for improved broadband infrastructure and the numerous benefits that state broadband grant funding could have on the City of Rice Lake. I'd like to thank Representative Eklund for his leadership on this issue and to the House of Representatives for making full funding of the border-to-border broadband grant program, making it a top priority this session. Our immediate focus was to bring broadband to our City Hall, which is located in the northern portion of Rice Lake. If we could figure out a way to bring high-speed internet to our own building, we felt the solution for high-speed internet for all of our citizens was close. Some examples. Each year, Rice Lake holds our local Board of Equalization meeting at the City Hall. It's an important time for the taxpayer to challenge their estimated market value on their home. St. Louis County tax assessors, along with Rice Lake City Council, will hear all taxpayers who wish to challenge their tax assessment. St. Louis County has several online sources that they use to guide their discussions. Each of them, 3 to 4 computers, all trying to access our network, and they all experience downtime. This is difficult for all of us to explain to the property owner their assessment when all the computers are frozen. The mayor had already discussed our speeds that we like to brag about. We've done the speed tests in our City Hall, and once again, 1.25 download, 0.65 upload. Our City Hall staff experiences very slow internet. It's very difficult to submit online applications, downloading a large report, or more than one user accessing the internet at the same time. Lack of access continues to be an issue and is hindering economic growth in the city. Here are some of the stories that we hear from our residents. We we get phone calls, and I just spoke with our city staff before we left this morning about those phone calls. Are they still coming in? Are we still hearing from residents about broadband? What are their issues? What do they want it for? And so there seems to be an uprise of employers asking for their employees to work from home. We've heard that before. It is happening in Rice Lake. Because the internet is so poor or unavailable, residents are paying a lot of money to receive dish service or some other type of service to get that internet to their homes. Businesses are not interested in locating in some parts of Rice Lake when they hear that reliable internet is not a possibility. Home businesses have to find expensive alternatives to make it work. Some of our schools are sending their kids home Chromebooks. My son is a fifth grade student. He gets a Chromebook to take home. All his homework is done on a Chromebook. These families have to stay after school or find other ways to complete that homework. Other families would just like to join in the latest technology, like home security systems that run off of Wi-Fi, online shopping. If you have a home business at home and you want to order up car parts, what does that look like? More and more people are doctoring online. Did you know that you can send a list of your symptoms to your doctor and they can respond back to you via online? They can charge you a little copay instead of going to the office. Entertainment is always on the list, but it's more than that now. Having dependable high-speed internet has become a necessity for a lot of folks. One experiment or one company that we had asked to come to look at extending services just to our city hall. Now, our city hall is located 1 mile north of where a private company charter stops. And so we're looking, okay, what's it going to cost to just push those lines 1 mile? So our figures are a little old because we had started this back at the beginning of 2017, but we're looking at almost a six-digit figure just to extend the broadband 1 mile. Now, Charter was not able to do that for us because we don't have 30 users in this stretch of a mile. So Rice Lake, we have a lot of frontage. We are very rural in character. And as you head north is when we lose that density that makes it more appealing for private businesses to invest in our city. The need for fully funding the grant program will give hard-to-serve areas or cities like Rice Lake the opportunity to create partnerships and to build out scalable broadband infrastructure and provide the entire city with access to reliable internet. A program like border-to-border broadband is crucial for the city to have a chance in bringing broadband to its residents. Without it, broadband is cost prohibitive. The legislature, we agree, should make funding this program a priority. I'm confident that the City of Rice Lake will put together a strong application for border-to-border broadband grant funding if it is available. Thank you for this opportunity. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions, members? Thank you, Ms. Hurst.
Thank you.
Next on the list, Daniel Lightfoot, League of Minnesota Cities.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I will be very brief. My name is Daniel Lightfoot with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League of Cities is a statewide association of 833 cities across the state of Minnesota. And you heard from one of our members just now, the City of Rice Lake, the newly incorporated City of Rice Lake as of 2015. And on behalf of our members, I appreciate Representative Eklund's leadership on this issue, as well as Representative Lehman and Representative Mahoney's work on this issue as well in the past. The funding for the border-to-border broadband grant program is a priority for the League of Cities, and you heard just now some of the stories that happen in greater Minnesota, but also a couple of communities in within the seven-county metro area still have access to wireline broadband speeds of the 2022 speed goal of 25 megabits up and 3 down. So I will just reiterate that high-speed internet is indispensable infrastructure for those living in Minnesota to compete in the global economy. Whether it's auto technicians downloading their parts manuals, a student completing an online class, as you just heard, a farmer using tractor guidance systems for precision farming, or a trucking company needing to track shipments and delivery estimates, that access to affordable high-speed internet is crucial, and it touches all facets of life. Cities, especially in greater Minnesota, continue to broaden their local economies to compete in the global economy, and they must be able to scale up quickly and connect online to be competitive. Broadband means jobs, it means education, it means healthcare, and the program is crucial to connecting those hard-to-serve lower-density areas to broadband infrastructure. So with that, I won't go any further. I do just want to say I appreciate the efforts this session and making broadband funding a priority. We hope to get this across the finish line this session. I'll stand for any questions.
Questions? Thank you, Ms. Leifert. Next, Bruce Miller, Minnesota Farmers Union. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm here with Minnesota Farmers Union. I want to thank Representative Eklund for bringing this bill forward. Yesterday, I had made my sister a promise that I would bring up what she had to say to me. My sister lives in rural Minnesota, Lake Johanna Township, Pope County. And I told her what I was doing today, and she said, well, would you please tell the committee that I have a question. If we can talk to the people on the moon when they're there, and we can follow a rover on Mars, why can't I get high-speed internet? I thought that kind of bridged what I had to say today. Secondly, I had asked Ann Schwagel from Big Stone County, Browns Valley in particular, if she could testify today. Ann lives 3 hours west of here, you know, where the bump goes out into the Dakotas. That's where Ann lives. She couldn't make it today. Snow. So she sent a note, and I'm going to cover most of this as a part of my testimony and then be very briefly at the end. Ann says, I am an organic grain and livestock producer in Big Stone County along the western border of the state, where I farm with my husband and two young children. We are fortunate to be in Big Stone County, which was a recipient of a border-to-border development grant for high-speed internet in 2014, and we had fiber optic broadband internet installed in our farm in 2017. Prior to that, the internet service at our farm was spotty at best. Having access to high-speed broadband internet through my local telephone cooperative helps me as a farmer and small business in a myriad of ways. Everyone in this room knows that the farm economy is in year 5 of a 3-year turndown. Broadband allows me to maximize my income potential by giving me up to the second market information and commentary to make the best possible grain marketing decisions. Furthermore, having reliable internet access allows me to market meat raised on our farm directly to consumers via our website, cloud-based software, and in turn allows me to capture a market premium that would be otherwise unavailable to me. I am also able to access the latest agronomic and statistical data so I can make the best decisions on my farm. This may include crop variety trials, new farming techniques or equipment on the market, or for my conventional farming friends and neighbors, the latest herbicides and pesticides. Lastly, I can seamlessly order parts and supplies for the farm. I'm a better farmer and business owner with reliable internet access. Along with the immediate benefits to us as small business owners, we benefit as a young family with access to high-speed internet. We are able to access our health records and have video visits with our doctors, saving our family a 60-mile round-trip visit to our doctor with non-emergent issues. We have done this before in the 1930s with electricity and the 1950s with the telephone. At the time, companies said it would not be profitable, but they were proven wrong. There are currently companies who want to bring high-speed broadband to rural Minnesota but need the granting partnerships with the state to cash flow bringing it to sparsely populated areas. I can't say enough how transformational this public-private partnership has been to our corner of the state. It is the best of America, a little bit of government help combined with entrepreneurs to lift the whole state, and I urge you to support this bill. I think Ms. Schwagel represents well the membership of Minnesota Farmers Union. Listening carefully today, and when it comes to questions of speed, you can't have high enough upload, and you can't have high enough download. You can't do business with satellite trucks, and you can't do business with anything less than high-speed broadband. Farmers Union has had full access for Internet as a priority for a number of years. Let me just say that this is a lot like the telephone companies and especially the electrical companies. Not long ago, I talked with an older member, actually old member, of Minnesota Farmers Union, and he told me he remembers the day that the electricity poles came across the hill and his parents sat and cried. We're at that point with high-speed broadband Internet. This is not a luxury. This isn't people sitting around watching Netflix, although yesterday would have probably been a perfect day to do that rather than driving around. This is access and it's a way of life. We can't let farmers be left behind. And for us, when are we done? When are we successful? When every farmhouse and every farm in the state of Minnesota has access to high-speed broadband. That's when we'll be successful. Mr. Chairman, I thank you for the opportunity to testify. Minnesota Farmers Union will continue to follow this bill, and we thank Representative Eklund for bringing it forward and for this whole committee for paying the kind of attention to it that you are. So thank you very much, and if there are any questions, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions, members? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next is John Dukish, Minnesota High Tech Council. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Dukich with the Minnesota High Tech Association. I'd like to thank Representative Eklund and you, Mr. Chair, for discussing this important topic. We're here to testify in support of House File 7. I'll keep my comments extremely brief. You have a letter from MHTA in your packets outlining our position on this issue, but I just wanted to reiterate the things we've heard from previous testifiers today. You've heard about the highlights of the grant program and the statistics and the impact that that's had on the state. You've heard about the impact of broadband or lack thereof and the challenges that presents for folks across the state. And I think the thing that's been clear is that broadband opens doors of opportunity for educators, students, businesses, and residents as they connect with telemedicine and market opportunities across the globe. So funding the grant program is really a critical way to help close Minnesota's digital divide and provide opportunity for every Minnesotan. And with that, Mr. Chair, we ask for your support. Thank you.
Questions, members? Thank you, Mr. Dukich. Last on my list is Steve Fenske, Minnesota Association of Townships. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm Steve Fenske with the Minnesota Association of Townships. It's about 1,800 townships throughout the state, and you can kind of see their outlines on that map you have. They're the small boxes within the counties. And I'm here, first of all, to say thank you to Representative Eklund and all the co-authors on it. You've heard all the reasons. I think everybody's sold on how important broadband is, but what you may not understand is the feeling that members, our members get. One is the feeling of they can't do anything about this problem. This program has helped them see something, see that there's action being taken on it, and we appreciate the help. Appreciate the $70 million. That's a level that really brings this program back to what we had a couple of years ago. It treats it seriously, and it makes a serious effort to reach the goal. And the additional $15 million, everybody kind of felt like the rug was pulled out from us last year at the end, because this one really feels like it's bipartisan and had a lot of support. So thank you, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. That's the last on my list. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Seeing no one else, then,
Representative Eklund, summary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think we're hearing a common theme here. Up where I live, International Falls, United Healthcare Group has announced that they're closing their processing center, but they're not laying anybody off. They want them all to work from home. It's kind of interesting. I had a constituent call me and ask me about selling her house because she likes her job, wants to keep working, but where she lives, she's not going to be able to keep her job. So she's actually probably looking for moving out in the rural part of Coochin County into the city of International Falls where she can get reliable broadband through her cable provider. Mr. Chair, we heard a lot of stuff here. Where I'm from, northeastern Minnesota, we've had a traditional three-legged stool, timber, taconite, and tourism. And I started talking about this when I first started looking at this office a few years ago. And we need to make that traditional three-legged stool into a four-legged stool and add technology. And I'm sure every other community's got some kind of similar lingo that they use. But that's what we use in northeastern Minnesota. And my final comment is I think we need to make it like rural electrification was, make it a requirement, not an option. So I appreciate the support. I appreciate the time in front of the committee, and I'll stand for any final questions.
Any final questions? Seeing none, then I will move that House File 7, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have some minutes to take care of, members. We have. I'm going to move to reconsider the minutes of February 13th, 2019, because of a formatting error. And so I would like support of that motion to reconsider. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. So the minutes are before us. Then, Representative Lean, would you like to move those minutes? From the 13th.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve minutes from February 13th.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Lean, I think you have another motion on the February 27th, 2019 minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move for approval of the February 2017, 29 minutes.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Lean, I think you have another motion for us for the March 6, 2019 minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move for approval of the March 6, 2019 minutes.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And then, members, last Wednesday we had a hearing on disaster aid, and there was a press conference on disaster aid today that I participated in. This is going to be a recurring topic for us. We will be revisiting this next week, hopefully with a firmer idea of how much we are going to invest in disaster aid. So just be patient with us, but we've had 2.5 hearings already on this committee, and we're not done. So with that, meeting is adjourned.